Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. And for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Jennifer Chen. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Kevin, and welcome, everyone, to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Jennifer Chen, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and early next week, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. You may replay it at your convenience. If you have not yet joined the new meeting, please do so now. The new meeting URL is available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Today's presenter is Katie Barrett. Katie has been a WebSphere Application Server SWAT Manager, providing short-term, in-depth, emergency WASP support, handling over 150 customer problems a year. Prior to WASP SWAT, Katie established and managed IBM's CATIA Scalability Lab in Seattle, Washington. She was presented the CoE Award of Merit for her work as a manager of CASM. She has worked on AIX and OS2 since joining IBM in 1989. Previous to IBM, she worked in a variety of fields, including symbolic processing, robotics, factory automation, communications, graphics, personal laptop computing, and civil engineering applications. She was an assistant professor of computer science at the University of Kentucky. Today's topic is malpractices, how customers get in trouble. The recaps will include a PowerPoint presentation. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask attendees to answer a few quick questions via e-meeting polling. After that, the lines will open for a question and answer period. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. If you are unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site by clicking View Presentation link or by going to any IBM.com site and type in 7008359 in the search box. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Katie.
We're on page 2. Today, I want to talk to you about malpractices. I want to define what a malpractice is, what's the frequency that we see these, what the malpractices are, what you can do about it, giving some examples from our experiences working with customers, and then questions and answers. What things to keep in mind here is that the things that we have seen are not characteristic just of WebSphere Application Server. They are independent of the technology that you use. So they are also things that our other SWAT teams have seen, whether it be in portal or in database or other areas. Most of these occurred in late tests or in production timeframe. Page 3. What is a malpractice? A malpractice is the opposite of a best practice. A best practice is something that when you do it, you are better for it. And if you do it over and over again, you will be in better condition. It is something that is good to do. A malpractice is something that if you do it over and over, it will hurt you. The likelihood of you getting into trouble gets higher and higher the more that you do it. It doesn't mean that every time you do it, you will get in trouble. People run with scissors and don't get hurt, but someday you may fall down and get hurt with the scissors. I know for myself there are malpractices that I do. For example, I don't back up my laptop. I know the risk of it. I still don't do it. So many of us do a malpractice and get away with it, but here is just a caution to make you aware of some that we have seen where people have gotten in trouble. Page 4. Our serviceability SWAT team works usually with 100 to 150 customers per year. We've been doing this for 5 years. So in 2005, we went and looked at all the customers that we had had that year. We looked at the ones that we had actually observed doing one of these malpractices, and it turned out that 2/3 of our customers did at least one of these malpractices. These were things that we actually saw in our working with the customer. 1/3 of the customers did not do a malpractice, or we could not determine if they did one. The data fell in about 11 categories, but keep in mind that if someone did one malpractice, they often did more than one. And one poor customer had done all 11 of them. Page 5. So these are the malpractices. These are the top 11 things that we saw. The customer having no capacity plan or scalability plan, the customer not taking education, having no current architecture, the customer not looking at their application to see if the errors were there, but looking elsewhere immediately, having no production traffic profile, having no load or stress testing, not having an environment to test in that was equivalent to the production environment, putting changes directly into production, having no migration plan, not keeping a record of changes. And the last one, communications breakdown, is not technology. It means people are not talking to each other. We take these 11 practices and go to page 6. You'll notice that for the 150 customers that we looked at, these are the way in 2005 the malpractices broke down. The very top one was not having a test environment equivalent to the production environment. This cascaded to a number of other problems in many cases. The second highest one was the application having an error, or the customer not looking at their application to see if they had an error. Oftentimes, this was compounded by the customer not keeping a record of what changes they'd made to the application or to their environment. Then the third one was no education. The customer not keeping up on education, which could lead to why the application might be having trouble after a WebSphere level was changed. Or it could be that something was not seen in a test environment that showed up in a production environment. So these things are interrelated. If we go on to page seven. What I'm going to do now is go through each of the malpractices. I'm going to talk about the malpractice, I'm going to give an example of it, and then talk about what you can do to mitigate this in your environment. The idea here is to raise your awareness of these problems so that if you see something like this in your area, you can determine whether this is just an emergency where you just have to do it this one time or it's getting to be a habit. If it's getting to be a habit, you want to think twice if you want to continue that habit. So malpractice number one is having no scalability or capacity plan. In the first example, we had a customer who actually did do a sizing of his hardware. He sized his box for 4 applications and got a very good sizing. But then he went ahead and added 72 more applications to the same box and ran into problems. They did not have a capacity plan done for the 72 additional ones. They did not look at over time how they were going to scale it up. And so their capacity plan was now obsolete immediately after adding the 72 new applications. On page 8, we talk about what we can do there. One of the things is to take a hard look at your application and your environment. Determine what kind of transactions you will have coming in, the frequency of them, what are your peaks and your valleys, and how is this plan doing with the growth of your business. For example, is this the plan from 2 years ago and your business has increased by 15%? Have you updated your plan for the 15%? You should try to get your environment to be able to exceed what you think are your boundaries, how much you're going to have. You don't want to have your transactions bound by your capacity. You want it to get as much as business as you can and not have this be a problem. So looking at the environment, such as the network, in addition to just your hardware boxes, is a key place here also. So look at the environment for a capacity plan. On page 9, having no education. often customers will get an education when they first go to the application server, but they don't keep updating their application as they go from one release to the next. Customer has said that he could not afford the time away to send people to classes. Another customer said that he did not want to read the Info Center, the Red Books, or the best practices. This comes back as a problem because this limits the customer's key knowledge in how to do problem determination, how to tune the environment, what features are new, and what features are being deprecated. So this can really in the affect the kinds of applications that you write. If we go on to page 10, one of the things that we have done is realize that customers cannot always get to class. And so we have put some things together that are free that I think will be very helpful. The new IBM Support Assistant can be used to locate information so you can find education and Red Books quickly. Part of the IBM Support Assistant is a pointer to the IBM Education Assistant. And the IBM Education Assistant is an excellent way to learn right there at your desk without traveling anywhere. And especially if you want to get a quick refresh on some concept or small topic, you can go to just a part of that information on that release. You don't have to look at the whole thing from start to finish. Another free way is to join a WebSphere users group. There are virtual ones online as well as ones in your locale. Also, this type of webinar, the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange, is an excellent way of learning more information. Many of these lectures are kept on for 2 years where you can go back and take a look at it. Several of the people from my SWAT team have done some of these on performance and problem determination, and you can then go back and look at the ones that are appropriate the time you need it. Also, there are webcasts, there are conferences, and you can look online at this URL to find more information. So we're trying to make it easier for you to find the information, make it easier for you to get the education, and make as much of this free as we can. Page 11, no current architecture plan. We went to one customer, and they had quite a complex environment. They did not have a diagram of this environment, but the whole environment was what was key. They did have one from 4 years ago, but much has changed in between there. So they had nothing current on how the application flowed between the different software products or the various applications they had. They had no idea, well, they had a hint of an idea, but they didn't have a clear statement about where things were in their topology, where the database was, where each node was, how things were laid out. And this is key when you're into problem determination. Going on to page 12. This is where process starts to come in, and in many cases, these malpractices are directly related to having processes in place. You need to have a process in place to keep your architecture document up to date, just like you need a process in place to keep your scalability and capacity plans up to date. So, keeping the architecture updated through the whole lifecycle of the environment includes leaving a available copy of the hardware layout and any changes to it, the software layout and the data flows, the version levels of all the software you have in there, any additions you've made, any plans for expansion. And this is often overlooked. Once something gets in production, they say, well, here it is. But there is going to be in production for quite a while, so you need to keep up this documentation over the whole lifespan of the application and the environment. At times, you may want to go back and simplify the environment so it doesn't become a patchwork, which becomes much harder to debug. Page 12, 13. Blind application errors. Oftentimes, a customer will say that there's an WebSphere application server problem. And sometimes there is. But what often happens is that the customer has not kept up on education, or the customer has not kept a list of what changes were made. And what we really need to know was, when an application error comes, what was the thing that was changed last? Was it a small change to the application? Was it a new patch level added? Was there a change in the network? But what was changed last? So there are a couple of things. Some of them are how something was coded. If you kept up on the education, you might find that some technique you used before is not as efficient as a new one might be. The other thing is that there may be some hints and tips that would make the application run a little bit better. It also could be a WebSphere application server defect. We still do have defects. We're much more stable, but we're not perfect. On to page 14. So what can you do? The key thing is to have a record of what was changed last. That the other important part is, if this occurred, the problem occurred in production, is to be sure that any changes that were made were really tested in a test environment under load, that is in a test environment that is equivalent to your production environment. There's an excellent chapter in this book, the IBM Application Server for Distributed Platforms and COS and Administrator's Guide. That chapter was written, in fact, much of the book was written from people from the serviceability team from SWAT. So they're talking about very practical things that you can use. So that's a good thing to hold on to. That book was written for WebSphere version 5, but that chapter is still applicable. And again, we do know of the problem determination and troubleshooting talks that are on this WebSphere support technical exchange that have already been done, so you can go and look at those too. Page 15. No production traffic profile. This here goes back to documentation and keeping up on the life cycle. This is knowing what your traffic is going to look like in different combinations of transactions, knowing how the capacity is going to be. Am I going to have a lot of transaction A at this time of the day? Am I going to have a lot of transaction C and D at this time of the day? How is the network laid out? How are the routers and switchers and hubs, the things that are connecting your complex environment together, how are they still laid out? And how is this amount and volume of data going to be able to flow over it? Also, look at how your business profile is affects the traffic. Now, if you are doing a lot of business during the holidays, you may find that your production traffic flow is different then, and you really need to do a separate kind of testing for that. On to 16. So once again, it's process and it's preparation and giving some thought to how your application is going to be used. Determine the types of transactions you'll have and the frequency. Get your historic highs and your typical days so you can get those into the testing environment. And there was one customer that we saw that did something very interesting. They took their historic highs and their typical days, and they captured that data by siphoning it off from the production environment and channeling that back into a test environment so they could reuse the actual data. And that was a very good way to know if they could continue at those production loads or maybe even increase those loads, but they had real data, the real combination of types of transactions they had. On to 17. No load or stress testing. We do run into people who don't do load or stress testing in their test environment before they get to production. We also run into customers who do not know what their actual load will be when they're in production. There are customers who don't have a concept of load or stress testing. If you just let people around the company bang on something that you are going to then let out on the internet, the volume of people and the kinds of combinations of transactions that you will be having will be very different than people just playing on it. So that is very key, and you want to be able to get to these boundary conditions. On to 18. The load and stress testing, I think there are several places here that you need to look. You need to look at your average day. You need to look at what is your projected load if you do great business in the future. And then you have to look at times when things are going wrong. For example, during Hurricane Katrina, which is why I put hurricanes here, the insurance business had all sorts of transactions coming in, probably one of their highest loads ever. They probably had not looked at stress and load testing at quite that volume. But if you did test at a very high level, you could have enough resiliency in your networks and your environment to be able to handle this. And that is how they got through that. They had done the good load and stress testing. You also want to be sure that you have looked at your boundary conditions. What are the boundary conditions, and can you just hit away at those to make sure that you are very strong at those? It's load and stress testing to be something that's repeatable and reusable, which is why having people randomly play on it across the company is not a good way to test, because that is not repeatable and not reusable. The capturing of data from a historic high is a good way because you now can keep using the data over and over again. Another thing is to use a test generator or to use a load generator, and be sure that these tests are documented so other people besides one person can run these. On to 19. No test environment equivalent to the production environment. This is the highest one, the one we see most frequently. And I want to spend some time on this one because it is very important. We have customers who will go and test an application on a laptop or two, and then put it into production, and the world is very different in production than it was on the laptop. We also have people who have circumstances that make it very difficult to duplicate their test environment. They may have 100 servers, and getting the floor space and so forth is very hard. However, if you don't have a good test environment, you may find that you are not able to do the load and stress testing. You may not be able to do really accurate testing at all, which means that you can't reproduce your problems in tests. Then you end up putting changes directly into production. So because of no adequate test environment, you may find that a customer is also doing other malpractices. On to 20. There are problems, I understand, in getting the additional hardware to test an application and to reproduce an entire application environment, but you need to think about that. The second environment needs to have the same hardware, the same software, the same patch levels. It needs to be identical. That is the ideal. It can be hard for a customer to get the extra people to maintain a duplicate system or even get the floor space. And some people, some customers actually will take the test environment and then just relabel it the production environment, which means that they have to take production down to have a test environment again, which is usually not acceptable. What I really would like you to do is to take some time to think about the consequences of not having an adequate test environment. If you are having to debug into production, you may have to set some trace or other debug things that may have a performance impact on your production environment. This will vary by what method you use. You may have to restart your servers, which means that you will have some downtime in production. Additionally, things in production, everyone is going to be watching. That's where the company may be making a lot of money. And so there's going to be additional stress and visibility on those poor people who are trying to debug in production. That can cause mistakes. Also, all the changes that you put directly into production without testing first may not work. And so it would be good to take those offline into a test environment with some privacy to be sure that they do work before anything is changed in production. On to 22. The ideal, as I said, is to have an equivalent hardware and software environment as just the same as your production environment. But there are a lot of requirements for that. If you cannot actually duplicate it, think about other things to do. You could have a load generator put there to emulate a part of the environment that you cannot duplicate, so that you focus on the key parts and you maybe do some load generation or some simulation for the parts that are tried and true and they are not your risky areas or your areas of change. You could go rent some software, some hardware or get a contractor to come in and do the testing periodically. And you need to have a test philosophy, a process. How often do you really need to go back and test things? Are you going to test them in a full-blown test environment every six pack? Are you going to do it every time you upgrade to a new version of one of the major components? Every time there's an application change? You need to have a testing philosophy that balances the benefits versus the risks. On to 23. Whoops. I want to go back to 22. Sorry. What I'm asking you to do on the test environment is to give some clear thought to what you can do to have a very good test environment. Later on, we'll talk about how you can estimate the cost of an outage, and much of those goes back to if you can have an outage, could you take that same money and put it into a test environment to avoid the outage? Going on to 23. Putting changes directly into production. We have seen this quite a bit. Sometimes it's just a major tweak. Sometimes it's a temporary fix. Sometimes they'll put something into production during a peak load and then it doesn't work. Usually it's because the customer doesn't have a test environment or the customer has a test environment but it's not equivalent. So they can't create the same load. They don't know have the historical data, or they don't have a load generator. And we once or twice have seen a customer that had a test environment, but they just never used it because they were so much focused on the production. On to 24. Well, danger, danger. Don't do this. Don't put changes directly into production. There, you need to go and look at what things you can do to avoid putting changes in production. However, once in a while, I realize that you don't have a choice. And so you may want to look at this talk that was a WebSphere Support Technical Exchange talk on how to debug things in production. And this was debugging performance things in production without really affecting your performance throughput. You also need to have a very good process, again, process, for what have you changed in production? What have you done to production? Why you did it, when you did it, was done by whom, and who okayed this? Production is your bread and butter, and so you don't want to take it casually. You do need to have a process there. 25, no migration plan. We have seen customers who, because they have not taken the time to think about a migration plan, are not aware of some of the new standards in J2EE that will affect their application and will affect their performance. They also often do not take time to think about and plan out the migration. So they'll say that they're going to migrate from version X to version X plus 1 over a weekend, but they haven't done the preparatory work before the weekend to look at what needs to change in the application, where the bottleneck is going to move because the performance is going to change. Some things will go faster, some things will go slower. The other area of migration is to understand what co-requisites or prerequisites may be changed. If it's a complex environment, there will be multiple changes going on. And so that needs to have some time and need to be thought out in a logical way. Again, it would be very good to test this in a test environment that was equivalent to the production environment that had the same load. On to 26. So learn what has changed. What are these co-requisites? And plan it out. Plan time to get the education. There are IBM Education Assistant modules for the new releases that come out. The IBM Education Assistant and the IBM Support Assistant apply to all of the software group products, not just the WebSphere. So it should apply to your entire environment. Look at and allow time for application changes. Do the full testing, the load testing, the functional testing. How does it recover from an error, a problem of, you know, someone pulling a plug? Practice the deployment. And then document any changes that you made. There are IBM Redbooks put out for each of the WebSphere application server new versions to help you migrate. And so there's the website where you can find those. On to 27. No record of changes. This one's awful. People often will make a tweak or a little tiny change and say, oh, okay, I'll make that change. But if they don't write it down, no one knows what they did. We have had places where two or more groups have been modifying the same environment. We don't know who changed what or who changed what first, which can make a difference. We have had conditions where someone has, in a test environment, got just a wonderful, well-performing application going. But since they didn't write down what they did, they cannot duplicate that again. And so they have to start from scratch. Page 28. So this comes back to process again. Record everything that has changed when it is made. And I say write it on a napkin. I mean that. I mean write it on anything, but write it down. Write the date and the time that you did it and put it in a single place. If this ends up that you have a binder that is full of napkins, that is fine, but you at least have it written down. What was the change? Why was it made? Who made it? When? And who was okayed this? What you don't want to do is to have one single person being the knowledge person for everything that has been done. You need to have this written down so in an emergency other people can find it, that if someone's on vacation, the information can be found. And if you bring in people to assist you in debugging, they have some idea of what has been changed from the last set of testing. There is a malpractices white paper, and some templates are put in there that may help you in writing these things down. Page 29. Communication breakdown. Now, this is one of my favorites. This is not anything technical. It is simply that one person will not talk to another person, or one person doesn't think to contact another person. So this is basically who needs to know what. Sometimes a customer and a vendor have some problems and they stop talking to each other, but they're still doing business together. Sometimes it's because there's no one in charge. On to 30. So what is needed here is, again, process, a clear workflow between the various groups that defines who needs to know what, who needs to know when you've made a change in test, and who needs to know when there's a migration coming, and who needs to know when there's a change in the application. Have the contact points for the various different groups that interface together identified, and make sure that everybody knows who needs the information that they have. Another thing is to be sure that the information actually does start flowing by people talking to each other. At times, there will be places where there are ruffled feathers and people are not getting along or people are not talking to each other. You can hire a project manager or bring in a project manager, or you can bring in a referee, but the communication needs to continue going. Page 31. here what I would like to do is start looking at the cost of an outage. If production goes down, how much is it going to cost you? This is just a quick and easy way to do it. It is not going to take into account all the different types of transactions that you have, but it will be some way that you could get an estimate. So it's a starting point. So look at the number of transactions per hour you're doing on an average business day and what the revenue is for each of those transactions. Then take a look back at your backup plan. How long will it take, if production goes down, to get a backup system in place and working? So the cost is going to be the number of transactions that you lose times the amount of money you get for each one of those transactions times the time that you were out getting the backup system up. There may be some other considerations that have to do with the time of the year, such as the holiday season, where you may have higher revenue that would be missed or a different combination of transactions. But this is just a starting point. So going on to 32. Let's say that you run a department store, it's the holiday season, and you make 50% of your revenue during the holiday season. A blizzard hits one of your major areas, so you're now reduced to having to use your online shopping. Then your server goes down. It's a bad day. Friday, December 14th, your server goes down at 9 in the morning. You normally do 500 transactions an hour, but during the holidays, you do 700 transactions an hour. Because of the blizzard, you think that you're actually maybe doing something a little bit higher. Your revenue per transaction is $156, and the number of hours it takes to put a backup system in place from a production down is 45 minutes, or 3/4 of an hour. That is, if everyone is in the office in place and everything is ready to go. It's a blizzard, so they're probably not all there. Page 33. So the minimum outage of 45 minutes is going to cost you almost $82,000 if everyone is in the office and you get a perfect switch done in 45 minutes. It's going to be $109,000 if it takes 1 hour, and it goes up from there. If it takes you the whole day, it's going to be $873,000 of revenue you have missed. You may have to, over an 8-hour period, think about which were your peak hours, which you also missed. So this may be higher. You may have some valleys there, which may be less. But this is a good way to take a look at that. Just take an estimate and see how much money you would be out. So go to 34. Let me go back to 33, sorry. So taking that money, that let's say the $400,000, what could you have done with $400,000 to prevent this? Could you have enhanced your test environment? Could you have put some processes in place? Could you have brought in a project manager? It's a number of things that you may not have thought you could do. By looking at the cost of an outage, you may be able to justify it. And I know that justifying why you want to do something is important. 34. So what else can you do? Well, the first thing is to make best practices a habit. If you see a malpractice, or if you're even tempted to think about it, flag it. Keep things simple. Don't make your designs too complex, or don't make them too patchwork. Again, much of this goes back to process, and so you may have one or two people you want to have refresh their project management skills. The other thing is, when production goes out, have a plan of what to do. What you need to gather right away, what data, what people, what documentation. Have a plan for who does what and who is the leader. Have someone be in charge and responsible for it. 35. There's also a lot of free things out there, and you should take advantage of those. Again, you're taking advantage of the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange today. The IBM Education Assistant applies to all across software groups, products. The IBM Support Assistant helps you navigate the support pages. It has education assistant links in it. It's got excellent search of the support environment. And it also has a number of tools now that you can use for problem determination. There's also a free guided tour of the IBM software support websites that you can get information on. And you can learn from IBM or themselves about how to do problem determination. And so I referred to that book, but there's also other things that the IBM support assistant will point you to help you with problem determination. Page 36, there's also the Webster conferences and the Webster users groups. Also, you might want to consider an IBM premium support so that you can be more proactive on keeping up to date. The idea of premium support is to keep you out of trouble as opposed to support is to get you out of trouble. There's also the IBM software services for Webster that has the project management. They can help you with the modeling or simulation if you don't have a full-blown test environment. And they can help you with performance tuning and other areas. 36 here, I just want to reiterate that you have a continuum from best practices to malpractices. Often you go from one to the other when you try a shortcut. If you try a shortcut, be aware and be warned it might be a malpractice. If you do a malpractice, realize some people have to do it. It's an emergency. There's no way around it, but don't make it a habit. On 38, I wanted to point out that if you would like to have a demo CD of IBM Support Assistant version 3, I have one for the Webster application server that I could send you. If you would like to learn how to navigate the Webster support URLs or learn about electronic service report service requests, let me know. If you would like to give us some feedback on the direction our serviceability is going, we also would like to hear from you. If you have an answer of yes to any of these, send me an email at katie@us.ibm.com and supply your name, your company. I'll need your snail mail address to send the CD, email, and phone number. Before we go on to questions and answers, I wanted to point out that after the question and answers on page 40 to the end of the talk, there are a number of references here, a number of things where you can find information that will be of help to you. Most of them are free. Some of them are text notes. Some of them are different places to look that I think will be helpful to you. Thank you for your time, and I'm ready to go to questions and answers, Jennifer.
Thank you, Katie, for a great presentation. At this point, Kevin would like to open the lines for questions. And Paul Griffiths from What's the Fear Application Service Want is now joining Katie for any questions you may have on malpractices.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off so that your signal can reach our equipment. Once again, if you would like to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone at this time. We'll pause for just a moment to give everyone an opportunity to signal. And at this time, there are no questions.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. At this time, we'll conclude our presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. And remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site within early next week. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Katie, for presenting today. Have a great day, everyone.